So my understanding is that all of you have taken two courses in quantum field theory. Is that vaguely right? So I think today will be pretty basic for everyone. We're just going to do kind of an overview of what the standard model is, what the particles are. But if at any point I'm introducing things that you haven't seen before, just let me know, and then I can explain things in more detail and kind of figure out as we go what I should cover in more detail or less detail. Okay, so a couple of things. I'm vaguely going to be following a book I like, which is called Gauge Theory. Of elementary particles. It's by Chang and Li. It's pretty old, and I'm not really going to be following it too closely, but if you want something to read, this is a great book. Maybe copies are limited, I'll probably photocopy some random things that are useful, put them on my website, and so you can take a look at that. So if that's the case, I'll email the TAs and they'll get it to you how to get that stuff. Okay. Another very useful reference is called the Particle Data Book. Are you guys familiar with this? Okay. Well, you can just Google it. Particle Data Book. You should Google is a particle data group. I don't remember what the website is, but you can just Google it. It's also known as the PDG. It's kind of like the Bible for particle physics. Everything you ever wanted to know about the particles that we've discovered so far are here, as well as a lot of very useful reviews for topics related to the standard model. Okay. So here's a brief overview of the standard model. What is it? Standard model is like the periodic table for elementary particles and forces. The particles come into two categories. First of all, you have your fermions, which we only need to worry about spin 1/2 fermions. And so right now, I'm just going to go through a list of all the fermions in the standard model, just so you get an overview of what they are. So I'll do it over here. So I'll write down their name. I'll write down their mass. And the other thing that you might want to know is what's their electric charge. And I'm going to express the electric charge in units of the proton charge, E. OK. So first, we have quarks. And there's six types of quarks. There's up, or U quark. There's charm. C quark, and then there's the top quark, T, and then there's also the down quark, D, the strange quark, S, and the bottom quark, B. So what are their masses? The mass of the up quark, it's around 2 MeV, it's kind of approximate. The mass of the charm quark is around 1.3 GeV. The mass of the top quark is 173 GeV. And then all of these quarks here, the first three, all have electric charge plus 2/3. So I'll just write it as plus 2/3 times E. And these three have masses around 5 MeV. 95 MeV, and then 4.2 GeV. And all of these guys have electric charge minus a third. We don't really know why there seem to be three copies of quarks, which have different masses but the same electric charge. And similarly, three copies of these things, which have different masses but this electric charge. We don't know why there's this duplication. The other types of fermions are called leptons. So that you have the charged leptons, which are the electron, the muon, and the tau. And then the masses are around 0.5, 11 MeV, 106 MeV, and around 1.8 GeV. And all of these have electric charge, minus E. And then in addition to the charged leptons, you also have neutrinos. Nu E, nu mu, and nu tau. In the standard model, actually, the neutrinos are massless. Probably you know that neutrinos aren't exactly massless, but in the standard model, they're massless. So I'll write 0, but 0 with an asterisk. And OK, all of them are neutral. So I'll just mention we know neutrinos do have a small mass, which is less than around an electron volt. But the standard model is defined with massless neutrinos. So that's what we're going to stick to for now, and we'll come back to neutrino masses later on. So you might wonder, why don't we just put in neutrino masses? How hard can it be? Well, the reason is we don't know exactly how to include neutrino masses in the standard model, because there's two possible ways you can include masses for neutrinos. You probably know that when you have a Dirac fermion, it's easy to put in a mass term, right? Just add an m times psi bar psi, there's your mass. Well, you can do that for all of these other fermions, like the quarks and the charged leptons. Those are the kinds of masses that they have. But there's actually another kind of mass called a Majorana mass, which you can also introduce as long as a particle is equal to its own antiparticle, which is only the case for fermions that have no electric charge. So neutrinos are an example of, or the only type of fermion in the standard model which have zero electric charge. And so they're the only type of fermion that could have either a Majorana mass or a Dirac mass or both. And since we don't know which one they have, we can't write down what the correct mass term is just because we don't know what it is. So let's just say we don't know whether neutrinos are Majorana or Dirac fermions. So we don't know how to include masses for neutrinos yet. And there are experiments designed to test whether it's Majorana or Dirac, but we'll come back to that later. OK. All right. Any questions on fermions? You should feel free to interrupt if you have questions. Oops. All right, next we have bosons. And in the standard model, they can have spin 0 or spin 1. Those are the only ones that are relevant. In the bosons, you can divide into two categories. First, you have gauge bosons. Which are spin 1. And the different ones you have are the photon, called gamma. And this corresponds to the electromagnetic force. The mass is 0. And the electric charge is also 0. OK. Then you also have gluons, G, which correspond to the strong force. The mass is 0, and the electric charge is 0. And then lastly, you have the W. There are two W's. One has plus charge, and one has minus charge. And there's also the Z, which is neutral. Masses of the W is around 80.4 GeV, and the mass of the Z is 91.2 GeV. And these correspond to the weak force. Then lastly, we have the Higgs boson, which is spin 0. It's a scalar. It's called little h. The mass is around 125 GeV. And it also has electric charge 0. OK. So those are all of the particles in the standard model. I just want to go over the different forces. Since a lot of the construction of the standard model is motivated by learning how to describe the forces in a consistent way, theoretically. So let's discuss the forces. So forces in the standard model are mediated by gauge bosons. The first one you know is from QED is the electromagnetic force. Which comes from the photon. The photon couples to particles with electric charge. OK. And then QED is just the quantum field theory of the photon and the electron. OK. So I'm sure all of you are experts on QED. Let me just write down the Feynman rule for the photon. Probably you know. You have a photon, and it couples to, for example, the electron, like this. So here's the Feynman rule. All right. Since the photon mediates electromagnetic force, the photon also generates the Coulomb potential, right? So you have the Coulomb potential. So the potential between electrons is the Coulomb potential. So it would be V of R is equal to minus, it would be plus, since it would be repulsive, alpha electromagnetic over R, and that's it. Okay. The next force is the strong force. This is mediated by gluons. So the gluon couples to particles with color. Of course, it's not a real color. It's just a name for something similar to electric charge, but different. OK. Color is like electric charge for the strong force. It comes in three types. And these are red. These are just names again. Red, green, and blue. So it's different than electric charge. Electric charge only comes in one type. Here you have three types of color. And there's also three types of anticolor. Which you can call anti-red, R bar, anti-green, G bar, and anti-blue, B bar. Okay. So quarks carry color. So I can write Q, so a quark field, I can think of as a triplet in color space. And the components are just whatever it is in the different color components, RGB. And then antiquarks carry anticolor. So an antiquark Q bar is a triplet of R bar, G bar, and B bar. Then lastly, gluons also carry color. They carry color and anticolor. So for example, you have like an, you have like an R G bar or an R B bar or whatever you want to write down. You might think there's 9 combinations, but there's only 8. So there's 8 possible combinations. So that means there are 8 gluons. So for electromagnetism, there's only 1 photon, but for the strong force, there's 8 gluons, corresponding to the different combinations of color and anticolor you can have. OK. So then the Feynman rules, would look something like this. You have a gluon interacting with quarks, like so. But because the gluon itself carries color, gluons can interact with other gluons. And so you also have Feynman rules, where the gluon couples to a gluon, like this. Or there's actually another diagram where you have two gluons coupled to two other gluons, or a four-point interaction like this. All right. So here, Q is a quark, any quark. U, C, T, D, S, or B. And these two diagrams have no counterpart in QED. And they only arise because gluons are charged themselves under the strong interaction. Oops. Good question. So it turns out that you can put together one combination of color and anticolor, which is neutral under color. And that combination is R bar plus B, B bar plus G, G bar. So this is actually neutral under color. And so if you have something that has this combination of color, this is like a linear superposition, then it will not couple to gluons at all. So this one is excluded, and so that's one that you don't include when you're counting the gluons, but all the other combinations are there. So we wrote down the potential between two electrons just in QED. It's just the Coulomb potential. We can think about what the potential would be between two quarks, or actually let's do a quark and an antiquark due to the strong interaction. So it turns out that it looks very similar to the Coulomb potential. So it's attractive, and you have you don't have the electromagnetic alpha, but you have like a strong alpha divided by R. So it looks like the Coulomb potential, just with a different alpha, but that's only true at short distances. As you go to larger distances, what happens is there's another term, which is like a constant times R. So instead of the Coulomb potential, it actually looks like this. So this is V as a function of R. So for very small r, it looks like the Coulomb interaction. But for larger r, the linear term is dominant. So if you only had a Coulomb interaction, it would look like this. Okay. So what this tells you is that it takes an infinite amount of energy to separate a quark and an antiquark. If you just had the Coulomb interaction, it just takes a finite amount of energy. But if the potential goes to infinity, of course, it's going to take an infinite amount of energy. So this tells us that there are no free quarks. And this is called confinement. All right. So all quarks and antiquarks must be confined into color neutral bound states, which are called hadrons. So it's like saying in QED that the only states you could form would be ones with a positive charge and a negative charge to form something neutral. Of course, that's not the case in QED. You can have objects that have net charge that can be free. But in QCD, the theory of the strong interaction, it's different. You can't have any free particles that do carry net charge. OK. So another way to say color neutral, sticking with the color analogy, is to call them white. Because if you combine R, G, and B, you get white. So this is called white. Just means color neutral. And there's two ways to get something that is color neutral. You can have what's called a meson, which is a bound state of a Q and a Q bar. So for example, if the quark has color R and the Q bar has color R bar, this is equal to white. So that's what I mean by color neutral. Or this is the case where you're combining something with plus charge and minus charge to get something neutral. But the new thing that you can have in the strong interaction, which is different than in QED, is you can have baryon states, which are color neutral. So this is a state that's Q, Q, Q. And the type of quark doesn't have to be the same, of course. But it's just, OK. So it could be any quark, any three quarks. And you can form something white by combining three different colors together, of course. So R, G, and B together also gives you white. Did you guys learn about why the potential of the strong interaction looks like this? No? Does anyone have an idea? Yeah, it's related to that. So one thing you probably did learn is this idea of asymptotic freedom. Is that familiar? So what it's saying is that at very short distances, which would be like here in the potential, then perturbation theory works well, right? Because the coupling is weak. And so you can compute the potential just by considering one gluon exchange. And the calculation is very similar to in QED. You compute the potential, it looks like the Coulomb potential, effectively. But then as you go to larger and larger distances, effectively, the coupling constant is increasing as the energy, larger and larger distances corresponding to smaller and smaller energies, the coupling constant is increasing. And so now the force is effectively growing as you go to larger and larger distances. And it's related to the fact that you have the gluon self-energy, which is related to the beta function, which is related to why the coupling grows as you go to larger and larger distances, or smaller and smaller energies. Of course, that doesn't happen in QED. And so there's no linear term in QED. Okay. So you may know that there are two examples of baryons that we're very familiar with. There's the proton, which is composed of two U quarks and a D quark, and the neutron, which is composed of a U quark, a D quark, and a D quark. And you can also compute like the proton charge. Let's just see that it adds up. So let's call it Q sub P. So we have two up quarks. We have two, since we have two of them, times 2/3 times E is the charge of each up quark. And then we have one down quark, so we have minus 1/3 times E. And so then the net charge of the proton is just E. And you can do the same thing with a neutron. It's just 2/3 times E for one up quark minus two, since we have two down quarks, times 1/3 times E, which is equal to zero. So the proton is neutral, and sorry, the proton is charged, and the neutron is neutral. Yeah. No, it actually can't. So you end up having to combine them in a way that's I'm being a little heuristic here. You end up having to combine them in a way that's color neutral. And so it's not just RGB, which is neutral, but it's actually an antisymmetric combination of RGB. So it's not just this quark is R, this quark is G, and this quark is B, but you have to permute in an antisymmetric way over RGB. So we're going to come back to this in more detail when we study the quark model. But this is just heuristic. Any other questions? Okay. So then lastly, we have the weak force. Let's just start it over here. So we have the weak interaction. The electromagnetic force only involves particles with electric charge. The strong force only involves particles with color, which are quarks and gluons. The weak force affects all fermions. And for the case of neutrinos, the weak force is the only way that they couple. So we have two weak gauge bosons. Let's stick with the Z first. Here's the Z. And the interaction looks similar in terms of the Feynman diagram to QED. So it just couples a fermion F like this. So F is any standard model fermion. But if you have one fermion coming in, it's the same one coming out. Doesn't change types of fermions. Can't have an electron going in and a muon going out. Can't have an up quark going in and a top quark going out. Doesn't work that way. We'll see why. Then you have a W. Let's just do the W plus. So we have a W plus going in. And since the W carries an electric charge, the two fermions here have to carry different electric charge. So I can have a D, an S, or a B quark coming in, and then a U, C, and a T going out. Or the W also couples to leptons as well. But again, I would need to have a charged lepton coming in, which has minus charge, and then a neutrino going out. Write it here. Only the W boson can change the type of fermion. So if not for the W, all standard model fermions would be stable. So that's important. Almost all matter that we have today in the universe is made out of, you know, protons and neutrons and electrons. Protons and neutrons only have u quarks and d quarks in them, because those are the lightest states. And all of the other states, like the tau, the muon, and all of the heavy quarks, they're not stable. We don't have them around today because they decay very fast. And the reason they decay is because of the W. The W can change one fermion type to another. And so everything is decaying through the W. To give you an example, these are called weak decays. The one you might be familiar with, this is the most commonly studied weak decay, it's muon decay. Did you compute muon decay in one of your courses already? No? Yes? No? You haven't. OK. It's just, I just asked because it's a common thing to compute. So we'll do it here. Not here, here. But you'll do it on your own. So here's the Feynman diagram for muon decay. Remember, it involves the W, right? So I need to use the rule for the W. You have a muon going in and a muon type neutrino going out. And then it connects to the W. And it has to be a W minus to conserve charge. And so the W minus then will connect to an electron and an electron antineutrino like this. So this is an example of a weak decay. And for the case of the muon, this is the only decay you can have because everything else is heavier than the muon. So it can only decay in this way. You'll notice that the muon, of course, is much, much lighter than the W, right? So it's not decaying to a neutrino and a W, and then the W is decaying. It's just a virtual W, OK? The muon is about 1,000 times lighter than the W. So it's just a virtual W here. All right. The other type of decay is neutron beta decay. Now, we have lots of yeah? Sure.
You put an arrow when you have electric charge, right?
No, I put an arrow where I have fermion number going in that direction.
Okay.
So I'm defining, for the charged leptons, I'm defining fermion number to be the one with negative charge. The particle is the electron. And if I put the arrow going the other way on this line, it would be like a positron going out. So I'm saying that's the antiparticle. Is that clear, or is it still confusing? OK. The other example is neutron beta decay. We have lots of neutrons in our body. They make up tons of elements. But a free neutron is not stable. There's no free neutrons roaming around, lurking behind dark corners. So a neutron by itself will decay into a proton, an electron, and an electron antineutrino. And again, we can write down the Feynman diagram. And because it's changing, here you have UDD, and here you have UUD. So we're changing one D quark into a U quark, so we know the W has to be involved. So what does the Feynman diagram look like? So let's say I have a U quark and a D quark. and a d quark. So here's the neutron. And on the other side, I'll have a u quark, a d quark, and a u quark. And so this is the proton. And so along the way, one of these quarks will decay from a d to a u, involving the w. And again, it's an off-shell w. So this is minus charge getting converted into a plus charge. And so this has to be a w minus. And then it gets converted into an electron and an electron antineutrino. And again, it's a virtual w, because the neutron, of course, is 100 times lighter than the w. So there's no way it can make a real w. And so here is the decay. All right. So this is sort of the very broad brush overview of the standard model. You probably have questions about various things that we didn't really cover in too much detail, but we're going to cover these things in more detail as we go. But I wanted to give you the big picture of the whole zoo of particles that we know about. And so where are we going? And so our goal is to write down a Lagrangian. Oops. To describe all known particles and forces. All known particles and forces, meaning the ones that we study in a particle physics context, we're not going to be dealing with gravity. We're not going to be talking about dark matter. And we're not going to be talking about dark energy, whatever that is. So we're looking to describe only the particles that I've written on the board so far. But you should keep in the back of your mind that there are these major unsolved questions which we want to figure out. How do we merge these three important things with the standard model? We don't know. But we want to write down a Lagrangian. And I'll just mention that the key ingredients that we're going to follow are these two principles of renormalizability and gauge symmetry. All right. Why do we want the theory to be renormalizable? Well, if the theory is not renormalizable, then you lose predictivity. Because when you compute things at one loop, you get divergences. And if it's not renormalizable, you have to include additional constants in your theory to absorb those divergences. And then when you keep computing, you get more and more divergences that you have to keep absorbing. And so there's no way to compute things in a predictive way. So we want a predictive theory. And then we also want to utilize the principle of gauge symmetry, which is great, because we know it works great for QED. But we have to go beyond QED. We need to include both abelian and non-abelian gauge theory. All right. So that's all for today. And then tomorrow, we're going to start talking about the Higgs mechanism and why it is so difficult to satisfy these two principles when you have a theory where some of the gauge bosons, namely the W and Z, have a mass. OK, that's all. Any questions? Yep, it can. It's rare, but it happens. You have a question? Oh, so the first term is fundamental, because perturbation theory is well defined there. The second term is more phenomenological, and what you would do is I don't think you can compute it from first principles, but what you would do is use non-perturbative methods for studying it, which is called lattice QCD. I don't know if you've heard of that before. Yeah.
The linear force of
QCD
again.
Oh, sorry, I didn't
even catch it.
The linear force?
Yeah, the BR.
Sure. Oh yeah. So you might have done this calculation in QED, where you compute the Coulomb potential starting from the Feynman diagram for electron-electron scattering. And you can do exactly the same thing in QCD. What you would do is you have like two quarks scattering, or we want to do a quark and an antiquark, scattering by exchanging a gluon. And so if you just do this, you get the first term. But now if the coupling constant is non-perturbatively large, you need to include additional diagrams such as this. Oops. And I guess you'd have like something like this, for example, and it just keeps going, right? Since perturbation theory doesn't apply, there's no reason to just keep the lowest order term, but you have to take into account all of them like this. And so the sum of all of these things phenomenologically looks something like this.
So you need the sum of all orders of the coupling constant.
The sum of what?
All loop diagrams.
So the sum of all loop diagrams phenomenologically looks like this.
Can we do that? Can we really sum of all the diagrams?
No, you can't do it analytically or even numerically using Feynman diagrams. You have to use non-perturbative methods where you don't use Feynman diagrams to compute it, but you use compute it non-perturbatively using lattice QCD.
In this computation, why don't we do the self-energy?
Yeah, you should include that too as well. Yeah. I'm just being kind of heuristic where, okay, you have a lot of these things, and so it's sort of like more stuff pulling it back together. Okay, forget about that. But yeah, you'd have to include all possible diagrams in principle. Any other questions? Yeah, you have to be careful about summing over the colors in an appropriate way. That's correct.
Can be like R
and G1. I think they have to be opposite color. I think it's if they're in a spin singlet state that you can do this calculation, but I don't remember off the top of my head. So I think, color singlet state. So you would start with a color neutral state and then compute the potential between them. So it's like, R and R bar, for example.
As you mentioned at the start, we don't know whether to treat them as Majorana or Dirac fermions.
Yeah.
Doesn't the different chirality between neutrinos and anti-neutrinos prevent them from being Majorana fermions?
No, it doesn't. I'm not sure what to say. You can... what we know is that the the weak interaction only couples to left-handed chirality neutrinos, and then right-handed chirality antineutrinos. But we don't know if there is a right-handed chirality neutrino and a left-handed chirality antineutrino or not. So if there's not, then you can pair up the left-handed and the right-handed, the left-handed neutrino and the right-handed antineutrino perfectly fine to make a consistent mass term. And that maybe is the right answer. Or you could introduce the other chiralities that were missing from the standard model because they don't couple to anything. And then you can form a Dirac fermion from that and write down a Dirac mass term.
You said that only weak, like W bosons can change the quantum field.
Yeah.
How does that neutrino oscillate?
Oh, neutrino oscillations?
Yeah.
So
Well, let me give you a short answer because we'll cover neutrino oscillations in more detail. But what you want to think of as the W so let's say I have a W plus here, and I have electron, muon, and a tau coming in. And the way I wrote it before is if you have a new E, a new mu, a new tau, like this, the W only couples the electron to its corresponding neutrino, or like the mu to its corresponding neutrino, for example. But it turns out that these neutrinos are not actually mass eigenstates. And so what I should have written down here are the mass eigenstates, let's say, 1, 2, and 3. And so I could do the calculation perfectly fine, where now I have an interaction where the electron could couple through the W to either one of these types as well.
Like during this computation, do you assume like mass, like for example, it's a Majorana mass or like?
Yeah, it turns out not to matter for the case of neutrino oscillations. All right, any more questions?